Reading with your kids.
Hola, ni hao, konnichiwa, assalamu alaikum, shalom, machaba, ciao, bonjour, namaste, jumbo. Bienvenidos. Hey, my name is Jet Li, and this is Reading with Your Kids. We are coming to you from the beautiful and book-loving neighborhood of Reedville, the loveliest neighborhood in all of Boston, Massachusetts. We are so delighted and so very honored that you're joining us in our mission to help all families grow closer through reading. We do that by sharing fun, thoughtful, and thought-provoking conversations with fascinating people who just happen to be writing books for kids of all ages. And in this episode, they just happen to be coming to us from beautiful Massachusetts. From the historic streets of Boston to the quiet charm of the Berkshires, we're spotlighting remarkable authors, illustrators, and stories with roots right here in the Bay State. Get ready for inspiring conversations with Peter H. Reynolds, Rajani LaRocca, Faya Creeds, and Jim Hill, Scott Magoon, and Todd Grindell. Of course, our mission in sharing these inspiring stories from Massachusetts is to help all families grow closer through reading. You can join us in our mission by telling all of your family and friends about the show and letting them know that they can hear us on the WREB AM/FM 24/7 radio network. And they can find us on the iHeartRadio app, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Good Pod, Podcast Addict. Wherever you find your favorite shows, you can find Reading with Your Kids. First up, we are traveling just a few miles from our studios in Reedville to the lovely town of Dedham, Massachusetts, where we caught up with Peter H. Reynolds celebrating the dot. Well, you know, we've talked so much about Dedham, we don't have to talk about the dot, so that, no.
Well, Dedham is, we call it Dot Central because this is where the book, The Dot, was thought up and written and illustrated. And I even met the main character, Vashti, in Dedham at a little coffee shop called Mocha Java. And so anyway, that's another story.
Well, you know, you mentioned the busload of folks from Japan coming in. The dot has gone global. You have fans all over the world.
Yeah, it's in, I've lost track, but it's well over 25 languages. There's a Braille edition. There are movie editions. There was a musical that's been touring the past 3 years. And it definitely has reached around the world. And of course, there's International Dot Day, which started as an event in a classroom in Iowa. An amazing teacher, Terry Shea, he fell in love with the book and shared it with his kids, and the kids loved it and asked questions, and they noticed, I think it was on Amazon, it says publication date, and it said September 15th, 2003. So they asked whether or not that was the birthday of the book, and Mr. Shea, being a great teacher, said, well, don't ask me, ask the author. So they wrote me a letter. They said, it's September 15th, the birthday of the book. And I said, that is a marvelous idea. So they had a birthday party for the book. That's the genesis of Dot Day. So they made dots and signed them and they created a gallery and they had dot food and dot clothes. And then, of course, you post it on social media and it goes viral. And here we are 17 years later, and it is now celebrated in 190 countries. And I think we've hit over 34 million dots made. And we have, we have schools, communities, individuals, towns creating dots, but not only creating dots, but thinking about what does that mean, right? What is creativity? What's the value of creativity? And also, how do we make our mark? How do we have impact? How do we make this world a better place? Because at the moment, we need a lot of help right now. And so we need to activate everyone's positivity and creativity to make this world a better place.
I agree. I'm mentioned here in the podcast, I'm almost 100 years old. And so I think the rest of my time is going to be pretty good. Hopefully I'll be blessed with a few more decades, but definitely looking to the future of my, my kids and possibly grandkids, we do need to learn how to become more civil, to be able to speak with each other more respectfully, and be able to disagree with each other respectfully.
Yeah. Well, I'm 130 years old, but that's in twin years. So when Paul and I, we celebrated our 100th birthday together, it was a number of years ago now. I remember being in shock when Paul told me that we were 100. And we actually had our birthday party at King's Bowling in at Legacy Place. Occasionally we do leave Dedham Square, which is our little historic downtown, and we went to King's, which is a lot of fun. So
So let's talk about the book itself.
Sure.
Who are we going to meet in the book? You mentioned one of the characters, and what were you saying?
Yeah, it is a picture book. I call it a picture book, not a children's book, because I'm a big believer that great picture books are for all ages. I think adults probably need them more than kids. But in this book, The Dot, we meet a little girl, and she is in her classroom. All the other kids are gone. Presumably, they're at recess. They're playing outside. And for some reason, Vashti she's glued to her chair, not moving. And you see on the desk, there's this blank sheet of paper. And her teacher kind of wanders by, looks into the classroom, and sees Vashti all by herself and kind of reads the room and realizes, you know, this little kid is having a moment. She's traumatized by this little sheet of paper. So her teacher, being a great teacher, uses one of the tools in the toolkit, which is humor. And she tries to help Vashti chill a little bit. And she says, she looks at the blank sheet of paper and she's like, oh, a polar bear in a snowstorm. And Vashti's not having any of that. She's like, very funny, I just can't draw. And her teacher just says, make a mark and see where it takes you. And so Vashti, being still feisty, she grabs the marker and she jabs the paper, and she leaves this one little dot behind. And her teacher, being a cool teacher, right, takes it and studies it very carefully as though it was, you know, a masterpiece. And then she hands it back to Vashti, and she says, please sign it, which, of course, is another fun way to get to relax Vashti and kind of surprise her, right? Why would her teacher be asking her to sign something that's just a dot? But she does, because she knows how to, in the book it says, you know, Vashti couldn't draw, but she knew how to sign her name. So she signs it V-A-S-H-T-I. She stomps out of class. She goes home, forgets all about it. The next week she comes into class, and there, hanging above her teacher's desk, is her little dot she had drawn. But her teacher has gone to Michael's or someplace with very swirly gold frames, and she's actually put the dot inside this frame. So she's framed Vashti's dot, and it's hanging above her teacher's desk. And I won't tell you the rest of the story, but that is a moment for her. She looks at that dot, all framed and honored by her teacher, and she's like, I could actually make a better dot than that. And that's that little moment, that trigger for her to say, yeah, you know, I gave it a shot. I think I can do better. And it's that bridge forward for Vashti. And the rest of the book, you see her blossom and bloom as an artist, but also as a teacher too, because she actually, one of the gifts that Vashti's teacher gives her is not only confidence, but the power of teaching. She actually planted a seed within Vashti to be a teacher. At the end of the book, she actually helps another student who's struggling. And it gets me choked up when I read the book to see that moment when she's helping this kid who's struggling, because I think empathy is probably, well, it's in short supply. And especially seeing kids being kind to each other and naturally empathetic towards another child, kind of melts my heart. So I'm very proud of Vashti at the end of the book. She helps a little boy who's dealing with his own artistic challenges. And he actually becomes the character in my next book, because The Dot is actually part of a trilogy that I call the Create Trilogy, because it's a trilogy, three books about creativity. The Dot is about getting started. There's Ish, which is keep going, develop your own voice. And then Sky Color is as long as you've got your creative goggles on, you will never stop learning. There's always something to learn. You never arrive at the destination. You're always learning.
I love that. You mentioned that you met Vashti in the coffee shop.
Yeah.
Does she know that she was the inspiration for this book?
Just last year, through a very quirky moment, I met this boy who said something, and I thought to myself, I'm like, the things that he is saying reminds me of Vashti, which I hadn't seen her in 23 years. And, so I asked him, is there someone in your family named Vashti? And he's like, yeah, I have an aunt. And I asked, how old is she? And she's like 32 or 33. And I did the quick math. I'm like, that would work. So I tracked her down and I called her up, and so I reconnected the dots with Vashti. But I met her in Boca Java. She came in selling flowers for school, and we started a little chat, and I was drawing, and she's like, oh, who's that drawing for? And I knew she was kind of gunning for the drawing, so I said, it's for you. And she said, really? And I said, yeah. So I signed it Peter H. Reynolds, and so I said, how do you spell your name? Which is kind of fun. I like asking kids that rather than just, what is your name? How do you spell your name? She said, Vashti. So I wrote it to Vashti, and I said, is it Vashti? She said, yes, Vashti. I said, well, I have never actually met a Vashti before. I think that's a really cool name. And it occurred to me, like, that would be a great name for the character, for the story that I'm writing about this little girl struggling with art. And so I went home. I tried it out. Vashti sat glued to her chair. Her paper was empty. I'm like, yeah, that's it. I can't imagine any other name.
That's very cool. Now, did Vashti ask for royalties when you reconnected with her?
She did not ask for royalties, although I think we should do a line of Vashti t-shirts, and she should get all the royalties for that.
Next up, one of my favorite authors. She's been on the show a whole lot, Rajini LaRocca. In this highlight, Rajini discusses her powerful new picture book, Some of Us. She talks about the challenges and triumphs of the immigrant journey and her own personal experiences as a naturalized citizen. This clip also delves into the topic of book bans and the importance of sharing diverse stories with young readers. It's an inspiring and thought-provoking conversation you won't want to miss. Join us right now from right outside of Boston. One of our favorite guests is returning to Reading With Your Kids to celebrate her brand new picture book. It's called Some of Us, A Story of Citizenship in the United States. Please welcome to the show, Rajini LaRocca. Hey, Rajini, how are you?
I'm great, Jed. How are you?
Wonderful. You really are one of my favorite guests. We've had some amazing conversations. In fact, we had a great conversation about your book about the heart, which was really fun. And I asked what I thought was a dumb question, but then you were very kind to say, no, it wasn't dumb at all. And you gave a great answer. And then I find out that book was banned somewhere. And I haven't had a chance to ask you, what in the world could anybody find issue with that book? I don't get it, and I haven't had a chance to ask you about it. So, what up?
So, it was it's in the city of Huntington Beach, California, where they've had some issues, and there's the town council, I think, put a bunch of books in the restricted section of the library. So it's like the kids section apparently is on the first floor, and the restricted section is up on the fourth floor. There's like all kinds of warnings, like don't come in here, that kind of thing. But I only found out about this because I learned that the ACLU and along with several citizens of the town were suing because California has a freedom to read law on the books, and they were suing the town council saying, hey, like, you're not allowed to do this. There's nothing wrong with these books. So in addition to your One and Only Heart, which is literally a picture book written in poetry about the human heart, they had like Everyone Poops, which is like one of my kids' favorite picture books from when they were a kid. It was just hilarious. And another book on the human body. And I think there were a lot of science books that were included. So I don't know exactly what they thought was going on, but someone who's in California said some of the times they were targeting books that had anything depicting anything that would be covered by a swimsuit. So I think there's a picture of a little kid with an EKG attached. And I don't know, if a boy is wearing a swimsuit, usually his chest is exposed. I don't understand what that has to do with anything. But in any case, my book has, it's been confirmed that it has been removed from the restricted section and it is in the children's section where it belongs. But
Thank goodness. It's out from behind that curtain that used to be in the back of the video stores. And I just made Rajani almost fit up for water.
Yeah, nothing like that. Nothing like that. It's just really crazy. But it just goes to show that, like, a lot of the people that are trying to ban books are not reading them, right? I mean, obviously, there's nothing wrong with showing a kid getting EKG. I don't understand what the problem is. And, there's nothing wrong with teaching kids about science and getting them excited and interested in science. So.
Exactly. Oh well. Yeah. And I've been to Huntington Beach. The people seemed fairly reasonable, but obviously I didn't meet everyone. So.
I don't know. And I think that there were plenty of citizens who were really upset by this. So I think that's why things have turned around, pretty quickly, but it's still concerning and upsetting.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. So let's see if we can get people upset about talking about U.S. citizenship. I started here in Massachusetts. Tell us about Some of Us.
So Some of Us is a celebration of all the people who come from other countries to the U.S., and bring all of their talent and hard work and culture and contribute to our country and our democracy. And it started because I was at a writers' conference with a bunch of writers, but also a bunch of editors. And it was like the last meal of the last day. And a bunch of us were just sitting around a table eating lunch. And three of us at the table, I don't know how it came up, but three of us were naturalized citizens of the U.S. And so we were talking. And as we were talking, you know, we shared our naturalization stories, and I said, you know, there isn't a picture book about this topic, and I think it's really interesting, and I think maybe, you know, I should write that picture book. And one of the editors said, yes, please write the picture book, and I would love to publish it. And so I got all inspired, and I wrote about it. I wrote the draft pretty quickly and then revised it pretty quickly and sent it off. And, yeah, so that's the editor who's publishing this book, Jessica Anderson at Christy Ottaviano Books, Little Brown, and she's also a naturalized citizen. So I am a naturalized citizen, she is a naturalized citizen, and the illustrator, Hoi Vung Lee, who is originally from Cambodia, is also a naturalized citizen. So everyone working on this book is a naturalized citizen, which is so cool.
That is very cool. And the process of naturalization, I think, what a perfect topic to speak not only to kids. I might think there are a lot of adults that could learn a lot from this book because we, especially now with all the arguing about immigration and whatnot, I think it's time we should step back and learn so that when we're having conversations with people, we know what we're talking about. We're not just repeating things that someone that entertains us is shouting on TV.
Definitely. And, you know, I think people should remember that unless you are Native American, every single one of us who lives in this country, our ancestors came from someplace else. Mm-hmm. So this is not a new thing, right? Immigration has been part of the history of the United States since the very beginning. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in order to become a naturalized citizen, like you have to live here as a green card holder for a certain number of years. And then you have to study for an exam, and then you have to take an exam on how the U.S. government works. It's basically like a high school level exam, I would say. And then you swear an oath to our country, and you swear an oath to the Constitution of our country, right? Not to a person, a specific person, not to Congress, not to the president, but to the Constitution and the ideals for which this country stands. And I have to tell you, you know how if you have to work for something, it becomes very precious to you? You know, I think that people who have to study and take a test and swear an oath specifically to become a citizen, that becomes something very valuable to them. And it's interesting, you know, the story, the book is nonfiction, and the book starts, some of us are born American, some of us choose. And I think that that act of choosing is really, really important. Yeah. And I think that sometimes people want to think about immigration with a particular negative slant. But I think if you look around, you realize that immigrants are our neighbors, right? Our kids go to school together. Like we take care of you in hospitals. We create music that you love. We have restaurants that people want to go to. We pick the produce that, you know, ends up on our tables. There's so many jobs that immigrants do. A lot of them are scientists. And you know, some people, come to the United States to flee something horrible that is happening in their country of origin. And of course, that should be something that we should care about, because we're supposed to be, the United States is supposed to be the beacon of safety and freedom and liberty, right? That's what we've always been to the world. So of course we want to welcome in people who are fleeing something horrific in their own country, but lots of people come from other countries because they have a lot to give our country. We ask them to come. We invite them to come. So there's all kinds of ways to be an immigrant, and I think they're all important to consider.
This next highlight is so much fun. We are joined by the dynamic duo behind Princess Battle Royale, wonderful picture book from author Faya Creed and illustrator Jen Hill. Faya brings her creative talents and Massachusetts spirit to this laugh-out-loud adventure, and Jen goes right along with her, where classic fairy tale princesses trade ball gowns for wrestling gear. Get ready for an inspiring and hilarious look at how imagination, childhood play, and a love for storytelling come together in one unforgettable picture book. We are in for a treat right now. We have the author and illustrator of Princess Battle Royal First, coming to us from beautiful Massachusetts, the author Faya Creed. Faya, how are you?
I'm awesome, Jen, and it's actually Royale.
Royale?
Oh, yes.
Excuse me.
No, that's okay.
E on the end. And Faya, I usually see Faya dressed as a pizza. However, today she is dressed like a character in Princess Battle Royale, like a gorgeous lady of wrestling.
Yes.
Awesome.
That's what I'm going for today.
And joining us from Brooklyn, the illustrator, Jen Hill. Hey, Jen, how are you?
Hello. I'm great.
And, you know, I have to, both of these women have huge smiles on their face. And so it's, and we've been laughing ever since we first connected. I just know that Princess Battle Royale is just a laugh riot.
I hope so. Yeah, I think it's action-packed. It's, the words are funny, but I can tell you the illustrations are so funny and so good. I really feel like dream team material right here between me and Jen. And I'm so proud to have done this project with her because it is really funny and very violent.
And yeah, it's a gift when you get to laugh while you're drawing. Like, when you're coming up with ideas, because the script is so great, I'm, like, cracking myself up.
Awesome.
So it was such a joy to do this book.
Well, when I read the description that Faye sent with the request for the interview, she said, "Gorgeous ladies of wrestling, meet the Brothers Grimm." And I'm like, oh, we have to talk about this book.
Yeah, that was right? My pitch originally. I think it's, but yeah, it feels so natural to me, the combination, but I don't think it's ever been done before. If it has, then no, we don't want to talk about that. But
yeah. Well, it may have been done on an adult wrestling show at some point, but probably not in a picture book.
Probably not, yeah.
So why don't we, Thea, why don't you start and just give us an idea of Battle Royale. Who are we going to meet in this mixed magical arts chaos?
Oh, my goodness. Okay, so this is a cast of thousands, which is what I usually write. So we have the main characters are some classic fairy tale princesses. We have Cinderella, Sleeping Beauty, Rapunzel. We have the Little Mermaid. We have Kajuya, who's a Japanese fairy tale princess. And we have Bedrulbador, who is the original name of Aladdin's Lady Love. So they're all battling the big villain, or the heel of the story, who's the Swan Princess from Swan Lake, who's a late addition. And then Little Red Riding Hood is the towel girl, and she has a big moment in the story as well. So it's all these fairy tale people that we know, a lot of us are very familiar with. Maybe a couple that'll be new additions we can learn about, but it's mostly like, it's very familiar material, but like in a wrestling ring.
I love it. And Jen, did you have a whole lot of fun drawing these characters, getting all beat up and messed up? And
oh my gosh, it's insane. Can I just tell you this? Look at all these guys.
Yes.
Look at all these guys. Like, so for you listeners out there, I'm showing the crowd that I had so much fun putting every single possible fairy tale character I could even think of, and then some, into the crowd. And I also learned Bedrulbador and
Kajuya.
It's like Kajuya.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I was doing all this research into like trying to figure out how to, like, some of them I just like came up with off the bat, but some of them I really wanted to like incorporate actual, you know, facts and not go way off scripts. But this guy, of course, the gnome, I don't know what he is, announcer.
He's
a green guy. He has fur. He's covered in fur. He might be mean. He might be nice. I don't know. But he has pointy ears. So,
so great.
He belongs in the fairy book.
When I wrote the narration, it didn't even occur to me you'd create a character for that. So when I saw that little, I've been thinking of him as a troll or them.
Yeah.
Who knows what they're, but I'm like, oh, that's the troll. But a good kind. That narrates the whole story, and I think he's so pretty and love, and I love him.
He cracks me up. Sorry.
Faye, you were mentioning that the swan from Swan Lake is the heel, and if people aren't familiar, heel is the term for bad guy.
Yes.
And I had my son was chosen to play Herod in the Easter pageant at his for school play or Christmas pageant. And I remember beforehand, I saw him in the hallway and he was all nervous. He's really, really kind of freaking out. He goes, Bobby, I don't know what to do. And I go, Chris, Herod, he was a heel. Just play him as a heel. And he went out and talking about knocking it out of the park. The kid went out, the microphone wasn't working and he threw it down. He goes, I don't need no microphone. He's just screaming at this.
Great. Herod would be a good heel if we ever did that kind of picture book. But I thought that you were going to say Jesus Christ Superstar. And he's got that wonderful musical number. And I was like, yes, that's a great part. But just being a baddie, I think being a baddie is good. And I love like having a baddie be such a big character in the story. I based a lot of the trash talking that this one does off of Randy Savage, of course, who went from heel to face. Face is what we call the good characters. And I think the ultimate face of this book is Kajuya. She's definitely like, she's the crowd favorite. And she gets to do a move that's real called moonsault, which is one of my favorite wrestling moves where you do a backflip off the top ropes. Everything else is made up. Yeah, that's a real move.
I didn't know that was real.
Then we'll go.
I just made it up.
He did it perfectly.
Oh, whoa.
He did it perfectly.
That's, like, blowing my mind.
Yeah. We'll go wrestling. We'll go, maybe not together, but we'll go see wrestling. And usually okay. There's, like, one, at least a match, and it's, like, the greatest thing that's ever existed. It's so cool.
And it's especially crazy when a guy that's 300 or 400 pounds does it.
Yes.
It's like.
Yeah. These are athletes. That's what I love about wrestling. Wrestling feels like play. Wrestling, like, professional wrestling is just, like, we don't like each other because we used to be best friends and now we're not best friends, which is, like, very, like, how little kids think. And I think it translates so well to little kid books, but also these, like, princess characters.
So, Faye, it's obvious that you're a fan on some level of sports entertainment. I grew up going to the matches at Boston Garden with my grandmother. Hulk Hogan would come out, Bruno Sammartino, and they'd rip off the shirt, and my grandmother would go, "Oh, Hulkster!" and it is it's a lot of fun, and it is, as you're describing, Faye, just, you know, this kind of, they're acting like 3-year-olds.
Yes.
And what was it when that idea came to you, when that bell rang in your head for this
ding,
to
ding,
start?
Ding. Yeah.
What was that like with you running around the house going, "Yes, I got it," and moonsault and princess and swans?
Yeah. It was like, and coming to the ring, a great idea. So I got the idea playing with my daughter. We were playing Barbies with a couple princess dolls thrown in. And I think she had this elaborate game that we would do. It would be like fashion show, but then also they'd be competing to be warriors. And so we were doing sort of the warrior section of the play. And I had a Rapunzel doll and I was just making up all these moves for Rapunzel, like the hair whip and tying with the hair. And I was like, this is so easy to map onto, like, fighting moves and wrestling moves, which is something, you know, I think my kids love wrestling each other. We used to, like, sort of, like, a bed, like a big, like a parent's bed is a perfect wrestling ring. So a lot of kids, I think, do this sort of, like, wrestling moves. It's like this original play thing that we can, like, do in the safe way. So everything sort of, like, started forming in my head. And really, it became a game of, like, what princess with what move. Like, there was no plot. It was just kind of like, okay, so we've got, you know, Sleeping Beauty, sleeper holds, we've got Little Mermaid, she's got a tail, what can I do with a tail? So the plot kind of was, like, secondary, maybe even, like, tertiary to the sort of developing the characters or their abilities even. Their personalities came way down the process. But I did feel like it's something that I also, I was not a huge wrestling fan, but I had this idea and I thought I need to get into wrestling to understand really what's going on. I knew, like, the basics. I knew Hulk Hogan. I knew Macho Man. I knew, like, you know, some of that stuff. Roddy Piper. Jen and I were talking about Roddy Piper. But I started watching not WWE, but the AEW, All Elite Wrestling, because my friend Tommy Ray, shout out to Tommy, recommended it, and it blew my mind because it was everything I love in entertainment. It was, like, heightened. It was flamboyant. It was almost like drag, but athletic. We could scream together. We can yell together. I knew that it was maybe not real in one sense, but in some sense, like, they're really doing this. The athletes are really doing this, especially the female athletes that are part of AEW are so incredible and funny, so funny. And I felt like laughing and enjoying this violence in a wholesome way. I was like, this is, like, that's such a perfect quagmire of ridiculous things that make me happy. And I think other kids, I just labeled myself a kid, but I think children and other adults that are children at heart will like get into it, sort of understand the silliness, but it feels important to win a belt.
Next up, author and illustrator Scott Magoon. In this highlight, Scott shares a heartfelt inspiration behind his book, There's No Place Like Gnomes, reflecting on backyard discoveries, building strong communities, and how stories, both on the page and in real life, bring us closer together. My friends, this is going to be a great interview. We tried to do this yesterday, but the conversation was so hot, it melted our guest's phone. Literally, it's crazy. Joining us to celebrate his new picture book, There's No Place Like Gnomes, please welcome back to the show, Scott Magoon. Scott, hey, how are you?
Hey, Jed, I'm very well. How are you? Great to be back.
I'm delighted to have you back. No one's been back so quickly, I have to say.
My pleasure. I'm honored.
You were yesterday you were talking to me between sessions of a live event that you were doing. How did the live event go for you?
It went well, as it went well. And, you know, as I was talking about with you yesterday, you never really know. You kind of have to just go in with an open mind, read the room, kind of react to what the students and teachers are sort of saying to you and giving to you and presenting to you. I mean, I have my material that I have prepared for every talk, but there has to be some wiggle room and some flexibility based on, you know, what the questions are, the energy in the room, the dynamic in the room. But yesterday went well, and they usually do, Jed. I got to be honest. They tend to go really well because, you know, kids are just so eager to, they're happy to see me. The teachers are happy to see me because it's a break in their day. It's a change in their routine. I'm happy to be there because it recharges my batteries to meet with readers of my books. Mm-hmm. And it's just a good energy overall. So it's usually, by and large, a really great time when I get together with students, teachers, and librarians.
Yeah. Yeah. Yesterday, you and I were talking about that, reading the room and knowing, you know, how to shift and move. I'm wearing my Clowns Without Borders T-shirt today. And you just reminded me when I was down touring El Salvador a couple years ago, I was working with two amazing talents with me, and we're doing this one skit all throughout El Salvador. And I would read the room, and sometimes I do it one way, and sometimes I do it the other way, and it drove one of my troop mates absolutely bonkers. And she would say to me, I don't mind you changing up, but just I need to know how to, you know, what is it that you're seeing that makes you change? And I'm like, I don't know. It's just a feeling.
You have been doing it for many years. Yes. I mean, this is something. Yeah. So I think that I asked because I think that is a huge part of it. A lot of that sort of being of that capability of being able to, you know, analyze and assess and read the room, as they say, comes with lots of practice. It's not something I don't think that is natural. And of course, there are some who can do that right out of the gate. But I think a great deal of that comes with years and years of practice like you had. What a cool experience you had with your partners performing.
It was absolutely wonderful. El Salvador is a beautiful country. They've come out of a long, dark time that they experienced for years and years. It's incredibly safe at the moment in most parts of the country. It's gorgeous. And
yeah, I'd love to get down there.
You know, every time, you know, here, you and I both live in Massachusetts, and everywhere you look, there's a Dunkin' Donuts. And, you know, but down in El Salvador, everywhere you look, there's a volcano.
Wow. Very volcanic down there.
Yeah, yeah. I think, I'm going to guess 6, but I think it's closer. It's in the teens.
Wow.
As to how many, and many of them are still active, although, thankfully, they haven't erupted for quite a while.
Right. Right. Interesting. Yeah. I guess I knew Ecuador had lots of volcanic activity. I didn't realize that El Salvador was quite as active as it is.
Yeah. Yeah. I had the pleasure in Costa Rica of hiking up to the top of a volcano, an active volcano, which was it. I was excited, but when we got into it and we're hiking up and we have to wear a helmet because it might happen. And then there's all these, every few hundred yards, there's this bunker that, you know, you run into if the siren goes off because the rocks are flying.
Right.
You get to the top and you can smell the sulfur coming out of the lava. And it's like, wow, this is cool, but it's also a little bit terrifying.
Yeah. A unique experience too. I mean, where else are you going to sort of get that sort of pyroclastic flow raining down and the smell of sulfur in the air? It's just a unique points on our planet that you just don't get anywhere else. That's amazing. That's so cool.
It really was. And you know what else is cool is being able to talk to somebody like you. Like that segue?
I did, yeah.
Being able to talk to somebody who's created so many Fantastic books, both your own that you've written and illustrated, like There's No Place Like Gnomes, right, and other illustrating for other authors. Tell us about There's No Place Like Gnome.
Oh, my goodness. Well, it's my first illustrated picture book for a couple of years, I think, since Linus came out back in 2019. I have had two graphic novels in the interim since then, but this is really a return to form for me for the for picture books, I should say. Mm-hmm. So kind of my speed dating pitch for the book has been when a small garden gnome's cozy backyard shed becomes the last hidden refuge for displaced animals. He must overcome his doubts and his bird bias to rebuild a safe place for everyone. It's kind of a warm, witty, I hope, tale of resilience, inclusion, and regrowing what we've lost.
Yeah, yeah. It's a beautiful. I'm imagining this beautiful kind of relationship between the gnomes and, as I understand it, there's foxes living underneath the shed that he kind of greets and welcomes into his hotel, backyard hotel.
Yeah. Yeah, in fact, it's funny you picked up on that, because those are the very foxes that inspired the whole story to begin with. At least the sort of the genesis of this story was we have a backyard shed, and under which lived, I would say, three, maybe four kits, baby foxes, for a brief time a couple springs ago. And not far from that same shed, we have a garden gnome. And it hit me. It's like, man, it's like a little, we have like an animal hotel back there. Year over year, we had, you know, woodchucks would be back there, raccoons, squirrels, chipmunks, and this year it was foxes. And of course, when I saw the gnome, I thought of him as the hotelier of our backyard shed. So, you know what they say, Jed, shed happens. And I was inspired by the shed and the gnome standing next to it. And that's kind of how this story came about initially. And then it sort of took on this other life of community building, you know, weaving together a community and coming together in a time of crisis. So that part kind of came after the fox inspiration. But you never know where stories are going to go, where your creative mind kind of wanders as you write. And that's where it led me, was the sort of, let's reconnect, let's reweave the community threads that have come untangled over the years, I think, is something that I wanted to address in this story. We can do great things when we come together, both the biggest of us and the smallest of us. And case in point with Gnome being the smallest of us, if you will, shows that to be true in this story. So I hope that comes across to readers. I think it will. I think it's pretty clear when you read the book what we're going for here, what I'm going for here.
Yeah. You know, one of the things, as you were speaking, I'm thinking, what a cool thing, you know, if there's no place like Gnome at the end of the reading of the book, or at the end of the 15th reading of the book, a family would be inspired to go out and to get to know their neighbors a little bit better.
Gosh, I would love that. I mean, and that can be a large gesture. It could be having them over for a meal. It could be a simple wave when they saw them. I would love to wave to my neighbors. I try to catch my neighbor's eye in the friendliest way possible, just to sort of acknowledge them. But so often, unfortunately, it's just, and understandably, people don't connect with just a wave or a simple how do you do? But I mean, I completely understand why they don't, given the way the world is. But gosh, it would be nice just to have a nice hello more often in neighborhoods, I think. So, yeah, if the book somehow inspires any kind of connection with neighbors, my job is done. I would love that. I think that anything we can do to reconnect with others is sorely needed and a welcome thing these days.
Last but certainly not least, in our Best of Massachusetts episode, we spotlight an unforgettable conversation with Dr. Todd Grindahl. Based right here in Massachusetts, Dr. Todd is recognized for his innovative research and how young children can learn science and engineering just by watching shows like The Cat in the Hat and playing related games. In this fascinating segment, you will hear how his experiment helped preschools turn screen time into real STEM learning and why the right kind of media can make a powerful difference for kids and their families. Let's dive into this inspiring highlight with Dr. Todd. We are going to learn something today. Our guest is coming to us from not too far away. Probably, they're probably, I don't know, 75, 80 Dunkin' Donuts between you and I, Todd, here in Massachusetts. And we're going to be talking about The Cat in the Hat Knows a Lot About That. Please welcome to the show, Todd Grindahl. Hey, Todd, how are you?
I'm doing great. Happy to be here.
Todd is part of SRI.com, a nonprofit research group. My wife just splashed our studio window with her hose. That kind of threw me off my concentration a little bit. Tell me a little bit about SRI. It's a nonprofit research group, correct?
That's right. So we're a nonprofit research institute. We've been around for about 80 years now. We were originally associated with Stanford University, so that's where the letters come from. They were the Stanford Research Institute. And we work on a range of things at SRI. I'm really fortunate in my work. I focus on education and particularly on the education of young children. And in our work, we do a lot of helping to understand what works for whom and in what contexts. And then more importantly, when we figure out what works, how do we do more of it with more kids and families and teachers across the country? So some of that are things like this. They are studies like this where we work for different organizations to understand if the things they were providing to kids were effective.
Yeah. I love what you said, trying to find out what works and what works for who or whom. Because, one of the things that we've talked about here a lot on Reading With Your Kids is the fact that we don't learn the same way. You and I might learn in completely different ways.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think that can depend on the circumstance, that can depend on the person, that can depend on the day of the week and how you're feeling. So it's important, I think, to have lots of opportunities, particularly with young children, for young children to be able to access both academic content, but also to experience the world in different ways. What I'm going to be talking about here today was work that was shared through a television program. And that was one of the key questions. We wanted to understand whether preschool age children can learn science and engineering skills by watching a television show and playing with the associated media. And fortunately for us, we have the Ready to Learn program. So this is a program that's part of PBS Kids. And they have, throughout their 30 years, been committed to understanding whether those programs and those services that they're providing to kids and families, are they actually having the effects that are intended? So they asked us to do a study, a real experiment. We were going to experiment to see if the children who got access to this show learned things differently than children who didn't get access to the show.
So I'm excited to know the results. Did they learn?
So they did. It was what we found was really encouraging. So to back up, when I said we do an experiment, how do you do an experiment with children? So we gathered 450 children and families, 4 and 5-year-old children from across the United States, and they randomly got selected to get one of two kinds of tablets. One tablet had all of these Cat in the Hat shows and games loaded onto the tablet, and the other tablet, all of those things were blocked. And it was just a normal tablet that they could use under their parents' supervision. We asked the parents who received the tablet with the blocked materials to have the children use it for educational purposes, but we didn't explain that. We did the study in 5 cities from across the United States and focused on families whose household incomes were less than $50,000 a year. And we gave them these materials, and the focus of that season of The Cat in the Hat, this was season 3 of Cat in the Hat, was on helping explain some really basic science and engineering concepts. So things like, what makes a bridge stable? and how did different surfaces affect sliding? And so those things weren't presented in the way that you would in a high school class. You know, here are the properties of physics. It was the cat with his band of friends playing different games and working through all of those different activities and having fun doing it. And what we found was in that experiment, after just 8 weeks, we tested them at the beginning. What do they know about these things? What can they do? We tested them 8 weeks later. And we found that those children who'd gotten access to the Cat in the Hat materials, they were able to do tasks like to build a bridge with stronger structure and stability. They were able to better describe which car is going to go faster down this incline and why. What are the words behind it? So they not only were able to apply this to real-world things that 4- and 5-year-old children like to do, but they were able to appropriately incorporate the scientific vocabulary, things like friction and stability and being able to characterize why one material was stronger than the other. You know, sometimes we think about science, particularly with young children. I'm a parent of children who are a little bit older now, but I remember this when my children were younger, and thinking that they're too young for science, right? Science is something that happens in high school and beyond, but it's not. Young children are natural scientists. I mean, what do? They ask questions about the world. They experiment. They see what happens. And that curiosity, that confidence, and those critical thinking skills are really important to be able to develop in children's early years. So we were really encouraged and surprised. Not so much surprised. I mean, this is quality stuff, but I think impressed that the things that children were experiencing on that screen translated into the kinds of activities they were doing in real life.
That's fantastic. It doesn't surprise me that kids are learning while they're having fun. I'm reminded back way, way long ago, probably before you graduated from college, I made a disabilities awareness video. And we talked about all the different things bringing people together, including them, and a school system between where you are and where I am that's very respected, viewed the video. And the response I got back really surprised me because they said, we love the message. It's exactly what we want our kids to hear. It was well done, but we're not going to use it because it's too fun. And given the community, I wasn't all that surprised, but it baffled me because it seems to me to be natural that if you have a kid that's having fun and is interested in something, I think they're much more apt to learn it and embrace it than if you're sitting them down and telling them pay attention and parrot back stuff that's not fun or interesting.
I think the trick is being able to design things that are both fun and that they speak to children, and they don't talk down to children, mm-hmm. but they speak to them in a way that is going to be engaging for them. But doing that with a focus on some important content or skills that we're looking to pass along. And this is one of the things. So, you know, again, I don't work for PBS, so I'm not here kind of shilling for PBS, but I've had the opportunity as a researcher to look at their materials. And I think it's what has long made them different. You know, these are shows, not just like The Cat in the Hat, but Molly of Denali and Peg Plus Cat, The Odd Squad for older children. Is that they're designed alongside educators, that they include members of their community to help them understand what is it we want kids to learn and how do we want to pass that along, and then they test it to see whether or not it's having an effect. And to their credit, when things don't work, they go back to the drawing board and say, okay, let's fix this and make it better. I think when folks think about children's engagement with media and with screens, they have some appropriate concerns about mm-hmm. that. And it's not that the very nature of the screen is bad for the child, although there's some talk about it's not as interactive, but I don't think that's the case. It's that much of the content that children are engaging with in these screens is made not with a focus on educating or developing or growing. It's made with a focus on monetizing their engagement.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when that's your approach, I think you focus on different things.
We hope you've enjoyed this special episode of Reading With Your Kids and will join us for the next exciting episode of the show. If this episode made you smile, if this episode made you think, or if this episode reminded you of some friends you have in Boston or anywhere else in Massachusetts or New England, please consider sharing a link to the show with that person you love. Also, please consider leaving a 5-star review and subscribing to the show wherever you find your favorite shows. Want to thank the folks who made today's show so wonderful, starting with our guest, our Best of Massachusetts guest, Peter H. Reynolds, Rajani LaRocca, Faya Creed, and Jen Hill, Scott Magoon, and Dr. Todd Grindahl. I want to thank my team, Fatima Khan, Chris Dardy. I want to thank my beautiful wife for all the support she gives me. Most of all, we want to thank you. Thank you so very much for making 2025 a wonderful year for you and your family. We hope that 2026 will be an even better year for you and your family. And we thank you not only for joining us here on Reading With Your Kids, but for helping to make the world a better, more caring, more loving place. And you do that every time you read with your kids. I'll be looking for you on the next episode of Reading With Your Kids.